I'm Pete Townsend, and this is Money Never Sleeps. We look inside the minds of entrepreneurs and at the crossover of startups, enterprise, finance, technology, and life as we know it. This week, I've brought together four of the founders from the Techstars Web3 Class of 2024 to help me dispel some of the common misconceptions around Web3 with the general public, including Julia Kemp, founder and CEO of PawPass, Tom Daniel, co-founder and CEO of Ember AI, Tiago Ferreira, co-founder and CEO of Fair AI, and Daniel Uribe, founder and CEO of Genobank. Even with an estimated 500 million crypto users around the world, the number of daily active users of crypto is less than 20 million, compared to the 2 billion daily active users of something like Facebook, for example. So for those around the world who have heard of Web3, blockchain, crypto, DeFi, digital collectibles, non-fungible tokens, etc., the vast majority are uninformed at best, and negative or fearful at worst. However, they don't really need to be informed about how it works, the same way you don't need to understand SMTP to send an email or HTTPS to use a website. In general, as early-stage founders, if you do put your head down and build, find customers and grow your user base, and hit the metrics to raise your round, you don't have to worry too much about the general public for now, or do you? What if you just decided that building on blockchain technology and leveraging the trustless component of blockchain is the best way to deliver your value proposition to consumers? How will the uninformed react? How have you seen them react, and what do you do about it? If what you're building is more for the crypto native, does it matter what the general public think about Web3? To answer these questions and more this week, I asked Julia Kemp, Tom Daniel, Tiago Ferreira, and Daniel Uribe what they wish the general public knew about Web3. All right here on Money Never Sleeps. Who wants to go first? Who wants to start with their introduction to themselves and a little bit about their business?
Hi, I'm Julia, the founder and CEO of PawPass. We're building the first ever digital ID for animals to digitize veterinary paperwork, vaccine history, and travel documentation, so owners can share a verified history of data with third parties using just a QR code.
Thank you, Julia. Who wants to go next?
Hi, I'm Tiago. I'm co-founder and CEO of Fair AI. And basically, we are building a decentralized marketplace for AI insurances with digital property rights. The way it works is that companies can create requests for problems they have and think they could be solvable by AI on our marketplace. Then developers can aggregate available open source AI models and build solutions for those problems. And anyone can then register to provide computation for those solutions. And those solutions responses can be NFTs on any blockchain. And the main advantage of this solution is that end users and companies can easily access and own high quality AI responses with more control over the model and its operator, and without bearing the infrastructure cost of the AI.
Thank you, Tiago. Daniel?
Thank you, Pete. My name is Daniel. I am the founder and CEO of Genobank.io. And we're in the intersection of Web3, AI, and genomics. So we are helping individuals and families to be able to connect to AI to have an explanation about their genetic variants in a privately held storage.
Thank you, Daniel. All right, Tom, how about you?
I'm Tom, CEO and founder here at Ember AI. We're building a conversational plugin for dApps that help drive onboarding and transaction volume and take actions within your dApp all through a single signature.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Tom. And thank you as well, Tiago, Julia, and Daniel. What I wanted to talk to all of you about today was that being in the Techstars Web3 Accelerator program means that there's a certain amount of education that you're going to have to do. I always like to say that if you are trying to explain blockchain to a VC, you're in the wrong room, right? And that you just shouldn't even be there. These days, with how the industry's developed over the last number of years, there's going to be less instances of that because I think folks in this space are more knowledgeable about what investors to pitch to and what investors not to. And there's a good, even though Web3 is still a very small segment, we've got a good base of investors in this market. Some Web2 investors that have come into Web3, and I'd say where the bulk of it is with the Web3 native investors. But when it comes to customers and users, that I always like to say that if we're going to be really successful with bringing Web3 into the mainstream that we need to be able to sell to Web2 users. And that the more that we can talk about just the core value proposition and what we're delivering to the end user, the better off we are going to be. So my brother-in-law said to me, Pete, what are you doing? What's this thing that you're working on? I'm like, well, it's about Web3. He's like, what is that? And I am not going to say to him when he asked me, what is Web3? I'm not going to give him my favorite definition that I share when I'm in Web3 circles, which is how Sam Williams, the founder of Arweave, defines it, which is the protocolization of composable web services. I said that to Tyler. He's a smart guy, but you know, he's not going to really be able to have a conversation with me on exactly what that means. Definitely could explain it to him, but it would be a very much a one-sided conversation. So I just kind of say, hey, Tyler, listen, it's a third version of the internet. It's like, okay, all right, well, tell me what that means, right? So I try to do it that way. But what I'd like to get from you is, how do you explain it when you talk about Web3 in public? And Julia, I see you're nodding your head. So maybe why don't you start?
Yeah, sure. So I think quite similar to you, Pete, in terms of the third version of the internet. But for me, it's removing the kind of crypto and NFT side of things. So I think crypto and NFTs have had good and bad press. So I like to think about Web3 more in terms of removing intermediary. So, you know, thinking about the internet as, I don't know, a community-run space where it's rather than a collection of services by big companies. So it's being powered by blockchain technology. But if you think about the services that you use right now, like Facebook or Instagram, you need to deal with the middleman to give your data across to them. So I like to kind of talk about more of the ownership side. So the third internet is giving you back your own ownership, basically.
Totally, totally. When you're using it at the consumer level, like you are, Julia, where it just kind of sits behind the scenes, it's something that in the same way that you don't ask, hey, tell me about this wonderful AWS server that you're on. If you're delivering a consumer proposition, you don't care. And I think that's where we're getting to with blockchain. And obviously, blockchain is a critical component of Web3, but the terms are not interchangeable. Daniel, maybe over to you. What do you think? How do you talk about Web3 in public?
Awesome. Thank you very much. So my first approach is to explain to the people that we needed as humans decentralized registry for digital property, right? Because these registers were like siloed. My property was registered inside a company context, right? But if I wanted to verify or litigate even my digital property, then I'm against that company. And now we have this tool, which is the public blockchains, where I can verify ownership by anyone. So in our context is we wanted to empower patients and individuals to have a tool so they can make notarizations or attestations on the ownership of their biosample data sets like DNA, RNA, microbiome, and then be able to empower them also with tools to verify that too, because that's for me the most important feature, that everybody can verify that. And we needed that tool that needed to be globally valid and have autonomy from the companies.
Yeah. And we, you know, I'm seeing this a lot as well, is that we had a, you know, obviously all of you were part of the top 12 that made it into the program, but there was another roughly 600 that did not. There was a number of propositions in there where it was just blockchain was the best technology on which to build a proposition because it enabled them to deliver the value proposition most effectively. And I'm hearing that both from you and Julia. Tiago, does that resonate with you? Obviously, you're more hardcore crypto native, Web3 native, but coming at it from an AI perspective. Tell me, how do you talk about Web3 in public?
Well, I usually don't use a lot of AI. Basically, I try to stand on the basics and try to explain Web3 as everyone else, and to then afterwards maybe explain why that would be useful for AI. One approach that usually works pretty well for me is basically talking that the internet is basically, or was, the democratization of the information. And the way I see it is basically blockchain is the democratization of the financial world. People usually are pretty much skeptical about that and how that could work. And then I explain that in 20 years, the internet came from almost nothing to nowadays, even my grandmother uses it on a daily user. So I think if we see like year by year, we don't see a lot of changes, but if we zoom out, it's pretty much incredible the amount of changes that could happen in one decade or two decades. And after people understand that, I usually try to explain data ownership and why blockchain is useful for that component. And then afterwards, I start explaining all the concepts, those could be used for AI, or could be used for all the industries. And we have pretty good examples here.
Gotcha. No, that's you got me thinking here. Anyone watching that show, Three Body Problem on Netflix? All right. I don't want to ruin it. But what is it? Amara's Law. People always tend to overestimate the impact of technology in the short run, but underestimate its impact in the long run. And we are very much in the middle of a very, very fast moving era of technology. Tom, what do you think? How is it that you talk to people about Web3? Do you need to with what you're doing? Or given that, again, you're kind of more at the coal face of DeFi, really, with what you're building with Ember.
Yeah, we are very focused on DeFi and the financial aspects of Web3. But, you know, for me, the real true value of Web3 goes beyond tokens. And, you know, like Julia and Daniel here said, is really about like ownership and equalization of access.
Definitely. Very good point. Looking at this a bit deeper, that are there certain areas that you wish the general public knew about Web3 that would make your lives easier as founders? You know, we talked about that if you are having to explain blockchain or Web3 to an investor, you're in the wrong room. If you're having to explain it to your user, then you are probably having the wrong conversation or focusing on the wrong things. But is there something that you wish the general public knew?
It goes back to my previous point about this like misconception about crypto. Like I think a lot of people that I speak to and I talk about Web3 or blockchain, they automatically think I'm running a crypto scam. And when you're in Web3, you kind of forget that that is the perception, but it is real and it's there. And I think the fact that crypto and NFTs have been all over the news, I do think that's good. It's been a great entry point into Web3. But I think it's important to recognize that it's part of a wider ecosystem. You know, Web3 encompasses like the decentralized applications or dApps, as we say, that operate on blockchain technology. And this kind of enables us to have a wide range of activities that's beyond just financial transactions or digital collectibles or art NFTs and swapping them for large sums of money. So, you know, that could be a DeFi platform or social media or content distribution. And they're all aiming to operate without that centralized control. And so the scope of Web3 is much wider than just crypto and NFTs, but also we're aiming to redefine how the internet works at its core, not just in finance and art. But I do think also it's really interesting as well, which I think a lot of people don't realize, is the adoption rates across different countries. Because here in the UK and I presume in the US, you know, there's a lot of talk of DeFi. It's one of the biggest use cases for blockchain and crypto. But there's some impressive adoption off Web3 and blockchain across other countries that I don't think is as widely known. So trying to think of an example, Estonia using it for its government ID system. People in Argentina right now are using Bitcoin to pay for coffee. There's lots of innovation in voting systems. But I think for me, sometimes when I speak to the general public, there's a misconception that, you know, you're trying to like pump the price of a crypto token, but that's not necessarily true. Like we're trying to create technology that's in the background of a lot of different types of applications, and they're being actively used right now across the globe, even if they're not being used in the UK in different use cases right now.
And does anyone ever think you have something to do with Dogecoin?
Well, a funny story that I did actually get my dog with the profits off a Dogecoin. So yeah, there's Dogecoin slightly linked to what I'm doing, but no, I've never had that association because I think in the marketplace, I'm pitching to a very Web2 consumer and I'm very passionate about blockchain technology, but I'm passionate in the sense that I want it to have a mass consumer use case where the dog owners and the pet owners that I'm targeting, they will not know they're interacting with blockchain technology. Just like they interact with email and they don't know how that works, or that, you know, you're interacting with Google. And I think it's interesting because with the first version of the internet where you're reading, the kind of irony is that because we didn't have these social networks, it was harder to discuss these things. And then we have the second version of the internet where, you know, you can use Facebook or you can share data. And because we have that second version of the internet, we're all able to discuss more freely Web3 and technology. So I think the general public automatically think it's just, you know, very technical first, or you have to be really involved in the industry to be part of Web3. But that's just not true. Like, Web3 and blockchain technologies is going to power applications that you'll be using every day.
Yeah, I get that. And I'm thinking it'd just be absolutely ridiculous if you launch a token, Julia, for PawPass.
I would absolutely love to. And, you know, I get asked that a lot. There's a lot of fun stuff in Web3 that I'd love to do. And there's a lot of ideas there. And I definitely get the token question a lot. So yeah, watch this space. It's definitely not off the cards.
Okay.
But maybe not in the short term.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. And it's like, you know, the whole meme coin craze is that we are now tokenizing emotion is effectively what we're doing. Okay. And we're moving this conversation towards the financialization of everything. And one of the biggest things for me is that I talk to people about even crypto, and the kickback I get is, what the hell do I need another currency for? I'm perfectly fine with the US dollar. I'm perfectly fine with the euro. I'm like, yeah, it's not the point. And then you start trying to get into that conversation, it just doesn't go anywhere for me.
But usually people that say that because they live in US or Europe and don't realize how other currencies and how other parts of the world suffer by not having a stable space.
Totally, totally. And it's the same conversation for me that that folks that I've worked with in the past on fintech founders that were banking the unbanked or enabling financial services for the unbanked. And you go talk to a wealthy VC on the West Coast of the US, this actually happened. And they were like, what do you mean the unbanked? Anybody can get a bank account. There's no such thing. And that was the response they got. So yeah, common misconceptions around what things are and what things aren't. And like I said, depends on the room you're in.
I think on that note as well, I think especially in the UK, I don't know how it is in the US, but when you talk about crypto specifically, I've had a lot of people say to me, well, we're just never going to be buying everyday items with crypto. It's just not going to happen. But I don't think there is a need in the UK to buy everyday items with crypto. Like, I'm a believer that we won't be buying everyday items with crypto. But like, you know, like we've said, there's a huge need in other countries to be buying everyday items with crypto. And just because in the UK we trust our banks doesn't mean people trust their banks across the rest of the world.
Definitely. Definitely. Daniel, you seem to be chomping at the bit there.
Thank you. No, I mean, it's a fantastic conversation. I think the main topic here is cryptographic signatures. The concept of DocuSign, HelloSign, and all this helps a lot. But now it comes to the idea of signing data, right? And that's really what we are teaching sequencing laboratories to cryptographically sign all the data they produce, because they are very proud producers of data. They compete by delivering high quality data, which is the representation of a molecule, right? Our DNA. And the turnaround. So it's how fast and how I can get the most or the highest quality data available there is how laboratories compete. And when they understand how now they can have a cryptographic signature that represents their laboratory, and with that they can sign the data sets they produce in favor of the donor or the patient, because they recognize that the owner should be the person or the donor owner, that's fantastic. But that piece of the cryptographic signature is essential and is not there. This the public key infrastructure, that's what I mean. Like, how can we have a signature that has two elements, the public address and the private key, or the public address derived from a private key? This is a heavy cryptographic kind of topic, but that would be fantastic to have it on every people's stack of internet.
Yeah, I hear you. And Tom, I see you nodding your head. Sounds like something that resonates with you as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's something that's very important for us here at Ember, is the self-custodial aspect, because I don't think you can have true data ownership without having a direct custody of your data and of your assets. If you maintain your access to assets and data through a centralized institution, then you are still beholden to that institution for that access. I think they have the ability to restrain or restrict, you know, what you have access to in those scenarios, and just kind of control that. And, you know, one thing that came to mind as well through this conversation is how important, I think, the realization that the internet may have actually been the first example of the power of decentralization. I don't think we would have the internet and usage on it that we see today if it was, let's just say, created by different governments having different segments of telecommunication access. I think we would have a similar situation that we do with the financial system right now if the internet had started in that way, where we would have very slow communication between different bubbles of access between countries. And there would be very large restrictions with what you could have done on the internet, what you could not do on the internet. But the very fact that it came about in a way that everyone agreed upon, this way of communication, and it was completely open and accessible to everyone. Yeah, I think that actually is what paved the path to unlock all of these possibilities that we all now enjoy, even, you know, everyone, you know, on Earth. And I think that the next level of decentralization through Web3 is going to unlock a whole nother plethora of activity and unimaginable things like the internet.
Oh, yeah. No, I love that, Tom, because we're righting the ship. We're putting things back to the way they were with Web1, right? Where it was decentralized. Well, maybe it wasn't decentralized, but it wasn't centralized.
Exactly.
And that Web2, because I think it was I forget the name of the law that was changed in the US in the late 90s, but it was originally you were restricted from monetizing things on the internet and that you couldn't sell anything on the internet. And so what did people do? They created ads, and that was allowed and that was legal. And that then led to the whole era of Facebook, of Twitter, of the social media, of putting ads in front of eyeballs and stuff like that. And now we're saying, listen, the technology is now there to go back to what we originally wanted to be able to do with the internet, which was commerce. So Matthew Lemerrill, who is with Blockchain Co-Investors, he's been on the show a couple of times, that he said recently that 20 years ago, 25 years ago, that we digitalized or we started digitalizing information and media, and now we're digitalizing commerce and finance. So that's it. It's that we now have the ability to do that with blockchain. Tiago, does any of this resonate with you in terms of the way that you're thinking about Web3 and you know, with what you wish the general public knew about Web3?
Yes, basically that's in touch of what I said a little bit earlier. That's my opinion of the democratization of information and now the democratization of the financial world. I agree with a lot of what Tom said. I think it's are good insights. And yeah, I think I also think the democratization of information started with the internet. And now you are seeing, because you are also have the ownership component, you are seeing a upgrade of that. So it started with the internet, but it was not 100% from the beginning. And now we are starting to get the fully decentralization of information. And I think that's also helped with the blockchain.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And Julia, that ball's right back in your court with the democratization of information.
I think for me, there's like an overarching theme that, you know, people don't realize that actually there's a kind of mission behind Web3 to put the ownership of that data in people's hands. And it's to create a kind of fairer, a more equitable world for people to live in. And so, again, you know, back to my comment, sometimes people, for me, I interact with it a lot in Web2, this kind of negative connotation of Web3, where there's been a lot in the news. But actually, the essence of Web3 is the complete opposite. It's to take back ownership. So instead of giving your data and your privacy to these third parties, you're taking it back to yourself, and you're able to do what you want with that data, and you can control it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that negative connotation is still very real. And last thing I wanted to do was for this to be a defensive statement, right? Because it shouldn't be. And I think there is an element of the general public that people think, oh, Web3 means the dodgier end of crypto and NFTs. Like, it doesn't. But even some VCs in this space classify it that way, is that they invest in crypto, they invest in DeFi, they invest in Web3. And I'm like, we call it, it's an umbrella term, that means everything that's in this space that may be leveraging blockchain in a decentralized and or trustless and or composable way. Okay.
I think even if tomorrow Bitcoin goes to zero, because we found, I think that's pretty much impossible, but let's imagine that we find a bug on the architecture of blockchains, and then all the blockchains, no matter what, goes all to zero and they are absolutely worthless. Still, I think the biggest achievement would be teaching people that the world could be different. I think that's a real valuable idea. I think Bitcoin, the idea, the ethos was accomplished. Even if the technology doesn't succeed somehow, I think a bit of the ethos at least was accomplished. And I think, yeah, just 2 cents on what you said.
Yeah. And you can't put it back in the box,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
I was just going to say as well, I think the other thing with the misconceptions, like the whole world of NFTs, and because people see, I think there's two big buckets under Web3, which is like crypto and NFTs. And so taking the crypto and DeFi stuff aside, I think NFTs, there's been a huge amount of press around NFTs, especially art NFTs. And I think it's great that the art world has kind of shown the world NFTs and a way to use them. But you know, I think there's a misconception of actually there's so many other use cases that you can use an NFT for. It's not just simply a way to trade art. You know, looking at, I'm trying to think of some great use cases. Gaming's a great one. Again, with certificates, licensing, what Daniel was saying about digital IDs and e-signatures. And so I think the media has put this kind of misconception of NFTs just being a way to, you know, trade a piece of artwork, and that's great. And I think that there is definitely utility there, but there's also a whole, there's a much more wide array of use cases that goes just beyond that.
Totally. Just like there's three different versions of the web over history, that over the last 7 or so years, there's three different incantations of the usage of NFTs, and you know, starting with CryptoKitties, and then moving through to CryptoPunks, where and Bored Apes, where that started to adopt more of a tribe and a culture feel to it that people could align themselves with. But unfortunately, that happened in the run up to COVID, when there was a lot of money printing going on, and these things were being pumped up to 2 million. And I have a friend of mine. When I first started talking to him about NFTs 2 years ago, he's like, I don't even want to hear it. My kid's spending all this money on it. Don't even go anywhere near it. But realistically, what's happened now is that it's evolved to the point where it's being used to gate access to things. It's being used to package up data like DNA, right? It's being used to package up physical items so they could be traded freely without having to move those items physically. There's tons more out there. And it's just, what does the general public hear about? Case in point, Warren Buffett, sorry, it wasn't Warren Buffett, it was Charlie Munger, may he rest in peace, who was Warren Buffett's number two for years, that he did a podcast with, I think it was John Collison from Stripe, and they were talking about crypto, and they started having a conversation around John saying, listen, I know you're anti-crypto, but can we talk about the financial side of it? And Charlie started taking his position on it, and John was introducing something about stable coins into the conversation, and it was clear that Charlie didn't even know they existed, and that 75% of centralized crypto exchange transactions involve a stable coin. We've built a huge global machine distributed to be able to move US dollar around the world. Okay. So I'm not saying that's all we've done, but that is one of the things that we've done with this, and that there's so much pushback on it. So, but listen, I wanted to round out this conversation. I think this has raised some excellent thoughts for me that are going to go into a lot more thinking that I have on this topic. But one of my favorite scenes of all time is from the movie The Matrix, where Neo lies down on that machine and the back of his head plugs into a computer, basically, and uploaded into him is Kung Fu. And he wakes up after thrashing about a little bit. He's like, I know Kung Fu. If there was one thing that each of you could plug into the back of someone's head about Web3, what would it be?
So I think it would be how it spreads power from big companies to regular people. So you're going to get a greater degree of control over online things like photos, messages, money. And it's about making the internet fairer, safer, more private for everyone. And, you know, imagine a world where you can have a say in the rules of your favorite online places. You're not giving your data away to other people.
Definitely. Love that. Daniel?
Very, very similar. It will be like these two maps, right? Your map of ownership or digital ownership on Web 2, which is none or zero. And then your map of the things you should be owning or you are the owner right now on the Web 3. So obviously the map in our heads is just self-explanatory. And what I'm trying to picture here is that is now is like real estate, right? It's like now this is the bits and the bytes that should be owned by you and are form part of the of this global machine, as you describe, of the internet. And in the Web 2 is just a corporate version where you only exist if the corporation totally wants you to exist, right? And that's totally broken.
Yep.
So this is the thing that we want to teach people, that, hey, the internet today is broken. And this is a very difficult part because they think
they
it
do.
Works.
I hear you. Tom, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to have a hard time saying it better than Julia and Daniel here. But, you know, it's not about Dogecoin. It's about ownership and accessibility and equality of access of utilities and public goods. You know, think about all of the dozens of messaging apps that we all have on our devices. And if we could only own the messages and the app would connect to our data repository, whether that's an NFT or some other blockchain mechanism, then we could choose what messenger app we use. Someone else could choose a different messaging app. And you know, I think it would simplify and expand the possibilities of our online experiences.
Yeah, I hear you. Good one. Tiago.
Well, follow up a little bit Daniel's sayings, the words. Basically, I would put probably Bitcoin white paper, and not only the Bitcoin white paper, but actually why that Bitcoin white paper appeared. So the broken things and why that appears. And a little bit mention relate to what I just mentioned before. I think that's the need. I'm really grateful for the Bitcoin, for what it brought to humanity as an ethos. And I would just want to more people have access to it. And of course, they can disagree afterwards, but at least understand it. And then we could start a conversation for there, because a lot of people disagree without even understanding why there is other side and why it happened. And so I would go further for that part.
I hear you. I'm so glad that on New Year's Eve, 1996, I tried Indian food for the first time. That changed my life. And I think people can look at Bitcoin the same way.
Exactly. Exactly. And some of them will disagree, but at least you will.
Exactly.
Have...
It might be a bit too spicy for you.
Exactly.
Right?
So. Exactly. But at least we can start the conversation from the same ground.
I love it. Well, listen, Julia, Daniel, Tom, Tiago, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a great chat. I know I'll be talking to you in the next 12 to 24 hours.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's been really good.
Yeah, thank
really
you very good. Much.
That does it for this week, folks. You can learn more about the topics we covered in the show notes on our website, moneyneversleeps.ie. Thanks to Julia Kemp, Tom Daniel, Tiago Ferreira, and Daniel Uribe for the awesome insights they shared this week. We'll do a deeper dive into the output of this conversation in our Money Never Sleeps newsletter on Substack. So check that out on moneyneversleeps.substack.com and subscribe. If you like what you heard, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, as it helps others to find the show. Also, thanks to Conan Brophy from Create Sound for mixing and editing this episode. Conan is an excellent media man to get in touch with when you're thinking about launching your own podcast. As for me, I'm an early stage startup investor focused on where fintech meets crypto and crypto meets Web3, and I lead the Techstars Web3 Accelerator. There are plenty of links in the show notes on moneyneversleeps.ie on how to get in touch, so don't hesitate to reach out. Finally, till next time, thanks for listening. See ya. Money never sleeps.